Welcome back, everyone, to the Dark Forest. If you're new to the channel, consider subscribing. Download your favorite scary story on my Apple Podcast and Spotify. Tales from the Dark Forest. Now, let's get spooky. Don't freeze, don't freeze, don't freeze. It was the mantra playing in my head on a constant loop as I trudged through the never-ending white landscape. At first, I stopped feeling my fingers and toes, then my face, and now I couldn't feel anything. I knew enough about hyperthermia to know this was a bad sign. Come on, Vanessa. We can't be more than a few miles from the ship. We could do this, Nick screamed, barely audible over the 50-plus mile-per-hour winds. We had been walking for what seemed like ages, but in the landscape of Antarctica, it was almost impossible to tell how much distance we had already traveled. It was pure white for miles and miles, with no distinct landmarks to use as a reference. Nick and I haven't known each other for more than a week, but I was thankful that someone from the tour was still here. I had read horror stories of explorers from the 1900s, whose journey to the South Pole ended in horror and tragedy. I didn't want to become another one. Hey, do you see that? It looks like a camp. As my eyes adjusted to the ever-increasing brightness of the snow, I saw it. It looked like a black speck at first, but as we got closer, I could make out the telltale sign of humans. Fire. We picked up our pace as much as we could, praying for the skin not to slough off before we could make it. I couldn't feel anything, but I knew that my feet were frostbitten. The closer we got to the camp, the more confused I was. We were in the most desolate place on the entire planet. How is it possible that someone is out here in a tent? Or on top of that, why would anyone lug camping equipment all the way out here from the ship, which had to be at least 10 miles away from us? Finally, the man's face came into view. He was a relatively handsome man, who surprisingly didn't have his face covered with a balaclava or goggles. In fact, he looked incredibly unprepared for this type of terrain we were in. He had on a thick jacket, gloves, and some heavy-duty pants with snow boots, but that was it. He looked just as surprised to see us as we did him. Not another step closer, chaps. Who are you, and have you seen the other members of my party? The man was surprisingly polite, for suddenly running into people in the most isolated continent in the world. I'm Nick. This is Vanessa. We were on a tour and got separated from our group. Nick wasn't telling the whole story, but right now we needed to see if this man could be helpful or if he would be a threat. We have been trying to get back to our ship for days, and we think that we're heading towards the coast now, but our compass isn't working. Would you be able to help? The man looked at us, apparently dumbfounded by our introduction. I'm afraid I won't be much help to you, lads. I lost my compass when I fell down a crevice a few miles back. Lost all my dogs and sled as well. I'm in just as much of a pickle as you two, though I don't understand how you took a tour here, or why anyone would want to, for that matter. He looked us up and down again, almost as if he had more questions, but was too hesitant to ask. Anyways, my name is Ninus. Belgrave Ninus. I'm here with the Far East Party to claim this land for the Crown. I've been held up here for a day or two, hoping to find my other mates, but I worry they may have gotten lost in this cursed landscape. Nick and I looked at each other, as now we were the dumbfounded ones. Naturally, we each did some research before going on the journey of a lifetime, and we were made aware of all the ill-fated travelers who lost their lives on the continent decades earlier. This man must have been mad from exposure. I'm sorry, you're with the Far East Party? With Douglas Mawson? I couldn't help but ask, with clear mistrust, Right. You know Douglas? So have you seen them?
Sir?
Nick intervened, still untrusting of this strange man.
I'm sorry, but what year do you think this is?
The man looked at us, almost as if he knew that we assumed him to be insane. Why, it's 1912. What year do you assume it to be?
Are you insane, Vanessa? You're going to spend over 15 grand to go to frickin' Antarctica?
Julie, chill. Haven't you ever had a bucket list? I've always wanted to go since I was a little kid. It's my graduation gift to myself.
Yeah, but you're a frickin' economics major. People who go to Antarctica are like science majors or something. How is a civilian even allowed to go?
Julie was a great roommate and an even better friend. She was always the life of the party, and usually the first person to egg somebody on to do something crazy. I couldn't help but be surprised to see how upset she was by my decision.
Listen, Jules, I already booked it. I've been wanting to do this forever, and it's perfectly safe. Everyone always says that they want to see the world, but they never include Antarctica as part of that world. I'll be going somewhere very few people have ever gone before. I'll see things that no one in their lives will ever see.
You haven't heard of frickin' Google? I'll show you some penguins right now.
I scoffed at her and I finished packing my bag.
I understand your concern, but this is what I want. I have all of winter break to go there. What else am I going to do? I have no family, I'm single, and I saved for years for this. Why wouldn't I go?
Jules' face changed into sadness. It was rare for her to give a shit about anybody, but this seemed genuine.
Hun, I'm just worried. It's one thing if you wanted to go backpacking around Europe, or hell, go to Alaska. People do that kind of stuff all the time. You're going to be completely alone in a literal wasteland. What if you get attacked by a polar bear? There aren't hospitals there.
Julie, I tried to hide my eyes rolling into the back of my head. Polar bears don't live in Antarctica. They actually live in the Arctic, you know, like Alaska.
Now Julie was rolling her eyes. Also, how many stories of girls backpacking alone in Europe that get murdered have you heard of? Didn't you see Hostel?
Yes, and did you see The Thing?
Eventually, Julie accepted my decision, on the condition that I call her when I leave and as soon as I get back to Buenos Aires. I gave her a full itinerary of all the hotels I'd be staying at while in Argentina. After a surprisingly tearful goodbye and a customary viewing of The Thing, we parted ways at the airport. In just a few days, I would be laying my eyes on one of the most untouched beauties on Earth.
Chaps, I asked you what year you thought it was.
The man looked terrified behind his stony demeanor. Nick gave me a quick glance, and without missing a beat, he answered the man.
No, it's 1913. We had heard of your party, and we came to rescue you. How did you make it this far across the tundra by yourself? You realize we're close to the tip of South America, right?
We had no idea if this man was insane, or if we had fallen into some time-altering wormhole. But regardless, scaring this man into assuming he had missed the last 100 or so years was not the way to handle this.
That's just not possible, chap. I think you might be mistaken. We came from Australia. You're suggesting I've walked, with no dogs or sled, thousands of kilometers?
Even with the wind tearing past us, you feel the weight of silence hang in the air. Well, regardless of the situation we found ourselves to be in, I do think it would be best for us to team up. God knows we won't get through this terrain solo. And even if you plan to kill me for my meat, I think I'd much rather that fate than freezing to death in this dreadful place.
With that, the man, or Ninus, opened up the flap to his tent and welcomed us into the fire. We all had questions we wanted to ask each other. But at this point, we were just so grateful to see another person that it almost didn't matter. We sat in silence for what seemed like hours, just trying to warm ourselves by the ever-decreasing flames of the fire. Eventually, it was time to sleep, but the undeniable curiosity of what the cold had done to my body groaned in me. There would be no way for the fire to last that much longer, so I used the light of it to examine my hand, and made a mistake of taking off the glove to assess the damage. It was much worse than I had imagined. My fingertips were completely black. The hand still functioned, and I didn't feel any pain, but the horror of seeing your hand like that would shock anyone. I couldn't help but scream.
"What? What? What's wrong?"
Nick jumped up with whatever little energy he still had.
"Vanessa, you need to put your glove back on and go to sleep. Don't look at it. Don't even think about it. We'll be safe soon, and we have to get through tonight. Please."
He was acting very put together, but even in the near pitch blackness, I could see the horror he was hiding. He was right, though. This was not the time to freak out. If I do that now, there would be no chance we'd make it out of this alive.
"Okay, folks, listen up."
Captain Korvik stood tall in the middle of the room. This giant, weathered man had probably done this to her more times than I could count, but he still seemed genuinely excited to make the voyage. "You're about to go on a trip of a lifetime, and I promise you, it won't be like nothing you've ever seen before. Pictures don't do it justice, but you all need to be safe. That's the most important thing. And I know a lot of you probably didn't bother getting medical insurance in case we have to haul ass out of here." The crowd laughed. Not one of them seemed frightened at the thought of going somewhere with no hospitals or medical professionals. We knew we were in good hands. Most of the people on the tour were scientists or photographers. Julie was right when she said I could be the only one with no real reason for taking this trip, but they all welcomed me nonetheless.
"When we arrive at the coast, we will be trekking out there for 10 days, weather permitting. You are to remain a part of your group at all times, no exceptions. If there's a blizzard out there, you won't be able to see the nose on your face, let alone your tour guide. We have 3 Zodiacs. They're like tiny inflatable speedboats. We have 3 seasoned tour guides. If you get the math right, I think you could assume you won't get to drive the boats."
The crowd laughed again.
"Now each of you will be split up amongst the tour guides here, but you'll never be far from another. This is so we can maintain as much safety as physically possible while getting you the most experience you paid a shitload of money for. Now, time to meet your guides."
There was a small burst of applause, but it lacked the candor of an audience, as there was only 9 of us in total. The 3 of them stood up and awkwardly waved to the crowd. With a heavy Scandinavian accent, the tallest of them introduced himself.
"My name is Seven. This is my brother Lars and my sister Astrid. We've been in this company for about 10 years now, and we all have great experience in traversing the Antarctic. We were born in northern Norway, so we are a ways from home, but I promise you, it'll get a lot colder here, as Captain Korvik said. Safety is our top priority, and we assure you, as long as we stick together, you will have nothing to worry about."
After all the speeches and dinner, it was time for bed. It was difficult to sleep. I was literally crossing off something at the top of my bucket list. The excitement kept me wide awake, imagining seeing penguins, the glaciers, and the vast, unending landscape. Finally, I drifted off to sleep, lulled by the waves and the uncharacteristic calmness of the sea. When I woke up, everything was black. Did I sleep until nighttime? Have we made it there yet? When the frigid wind sliced my bones and I remembered I was still here, gone with the excitement I had going into this adventure only days before. I realized that it was black because my eyes weren't open. My eyelids were frozen together. Carefully, I took my gloved and frostbitten hand and tried to pull them apart, my left, and then my right eye. It didn't hurt at all, which worried me.
If my eyelids somehow fell off or something, I would be even more screwed than I thought. My goggles could only prevent so much, and snow blindness was starting to set in. I regretted not wearing my goggles to sleep.
Nick. Nick, are you awake?
No answer. I sat up and tried to get my bearings. The tent was nowhere to be seen. It must have blown away from the wind somehow. There were two black figures a few yards away. Fearing the worst, I ran over to them.
Nick, are you all right?
I flipped over the body only to fall back in terror. The person in front of me was clearly dead, but must have been for a long time. The skin was pitch black and barely clinging to the skeleton, completely mummified. The eyes were just empty sockets, and the lack of lips made it look like it was given an evil smile. I screamed at the top of my lungs, but my voice was so hoarse that no sound came out. The other figure got up, and with the smallest sense of relief, I realized it was Nick.
What the hell? Is that the guy from last night?
Nick was as shocked as I was, which made me feel a little better about my mental state.
No. No way. Vanessa, that guy last night was like 25. This thing had to at least be a few decades old. How was this possible?
He bent down to examine the body, and then we realized it had the same strange clothing on that the man from the night before did.
No. We're losing it. We're hallucinating this.
We read all those horrifying stories about people who have died out here, and we're imagining this.
Nick, the body is right here, and he did say it was 1912. What if something else is going on here?
I fully realized that what I had just suggested was insane. Nick just stared at the mummy, saying nothing.
We need to leave. I don't know what kind of messed up horror movie this is, but we need to leave. Let's go.
Without arguing, I nodded and we went on our way. Neither of us wanted to dwell on the thought for too long, because it just didn't make sense. On top of that, we were still miles from the ship, if it was even still there.
Nick, do you think that guy from last night could have something to do with the others?
Don't. Please don't. I'm trying so hard not to lose my mind right now, please. We had found some shelter in a cave nearby. It wasn't warm, but at least it provided us with a break from the unforgiving wind.
We can't just ignore what happened. What if it can help us somehow? How the hell is it going to help us, Vanessa? How the hell can our whole frickin' group drop dead out of frickin' nowhere to help us, Vanessa? This doesn't make any frickin' sense. It was probably a freak gas leak or something. I don't know. Maybe it was the food on the ship. Maybe...
He suddenly broke down in tears. This blurry, strong-willed man was completely at a loss for what we had seen in the past 48 hours.
I just wanted to take some frickin' pictures, man. I was going to enter a National Geographic. I thought this was going to be a beautiful experience. Why is this frickin' happening?
I could barely make out the words between his heavy sobs and the wind whipping by the mouth of the cave.
We're not going to make it out of here. We're going to just die out here.
No. No, we're not, Nick. Don't say that. We're going to be okay. We are.
No, because you're right. Why did they just die like that? They just frickin' all dropped dead. Why didn't we? And how the hell did we end up here? We were so close to the coast. We might not even be going the right way because this frickin' compass won't even work.
He threw the compass at the wall in the cave and it broke into bits. Nick and I both watched in disbelief as the fragments of the compass turned to a red mist before our eyes.
What?
Nick, what was that compass made of? Maybe it rusted.
I was just trying to make sense of anything I could at this point.
Then Nick took off his shoe and threw that at the wall. As the shoe hit the ground, it turned into the same red mist.
Vanessa?
Now Nick was completely screwed,
because he had one shoe and his sock was completely soaked with blood. Clearly, he had much more frostbite than I had at that point. He started to stand up, eyes focused on the wall. His demeanor had completely changed, and he looked determined. "Nick, stop." Before I could do anything, Nick ran directly into the wall. I only had time to close my eyes and shield myself from whatever red mist his body would dissipate into. But then I heard him scream, or not so much scream as gurgle. When he ran into the wall, he must have hesitated just a moment before impact. Apparently, whatever curse possessed this cave only affected what touched the wall. When I finally looked to see the result of what he had done, I couldn't help but vomit. Nick laid on the ground, choking on his blood. It looked as if someone had taken a sword and sliced his face off perfectly, right past his hairline. His eyes, nose, and jaw were all perfectly bisected, and his tongue flew about wildly in what was left of his mouth. His hands were completely gone, blood dripping from the tendons and bone hanging out. On top of that, his right knee seemed to have hit the wall along with the front of his foot, and those were both bleeding profusely as well. It was the most horrifying sight I had ever seen, and I had no idea what I could possibly do to help him. I wasn't prepared for the breathtaking view. It was the most gorgeous landscape I had ever seen. White, dusty snow drifted lazily through the air as the sound of waves crashing against the iceberg run through my ears. I closed my eyes and took a deep breath. I never realized that the air in my city tasted bad. Breathing the air here felt like a cool glass of water after days in the sun. Everything I had imagined about Antarctica couldn't even compare to what it truly was. "Let's go, folks. Each of you, remember to stick with your assigned groups. And don't wander off. I'll see you all around dinner time." With that, Korvac gave us a wave and retreated back to his cabin. I was paired with Nick and Jesse, who were both photographers. Lars was our assigned guide, and because I was more or less along for the ride, we took our time catching up with the other groups so they could take photos. No, we are not terribly far from the Rani Ice Shelf. An interesting event that happens in these ice shelves is called calving. It's when parts of the ice breaks off and creates glaciers. Scientists predict that the next time that this happens with the Rani Ice Shelf, it will raise sea levels by almost a fifth of an inch. Lars was quiet, but he knew his shit. We were only a few miles into our trip when we heard Jesse gasp, and then drop to the ground. "Jesse! Jesse, wake up!" Nick was hunched over Jesse and now performing CPR. I immediately started the panic. "Where is Lars?" The landscape that was so beautiful to me mere hours ago was now tormenting. A horrible storm came out of nowhere, and it was difficult to see even a few feet ahead of us. The other group shouldn't have been far away, but we hadn't seen any of them for at least a half an hour. "Vanessa, get over here!" When I ran over to Nick, I saw that Jesse wasn't alone. Lars's body was laying beside him. Eyes bloodshot, he was clearly dead.
"Nick, what the hell? What happened to them? They were fine a second ago."
"I don't know. Maybe they were sick or something, or..."
"They weren't sick. Sick people don't drop dead at the exact same time. We need to find the other groups."
We trudged through the snow, each of us hauling a body. With the encroaching blizzard, we knew that they would never be found if we left them to go get help. Without a word between us, we knew that we could only lug them for so long before we had to leave them to save ourselves. To our relief, we heard the sound of a boat.
"The Zodiacs! They must have been waiting for us to get there before they set off the coast!"
Nick exclaimed as he set down Lars' body to run towards the sound of the sputtering engine.
"No. No." Nick, what's wrong?
I dropped Jesse's body and dashed towards Nick. The other groups. I don't understand. I followed Nick's hopeless glance to see the members of the two remaining groups all laying dead with bloodshot eyes. It means it's just us. I don't know why. Maybe I'm having a nightmare or something. I couldn't help it. I broke down sobbing, screaming for help when I knew that no one would come. Our only hope was the captain of the ship, and we didn't even know where the ship was, or if the captain had suffered the same fate as the other travelers. Okay, let's just stay calm. I have a compass, we have our lunches still, and each of the guides had a first aid kit. Let's each take one. We're just at the tip of the continent. We just need to head north, and we'll get to the ship, and we'll be okay. Nick was surprisingly level-headed for seeing seven people that had drank and dined with us suddenly dead. He adjusted his goggles and pulled out his compass. It's not working. Okay. We're just going to go back the way we came. We're just going to follow a straight line back to where we came, and we'll get to the ship. What if the captain... Vanessa, we'll go back to the ship and deal with whatever we find there then. We can't afford to think of that right now. Whatever killed them might still be a threat to us. If it's something like a natural gas leak, then we need the move like now. We'll at least have food, supplies, and a damn radio on the ship. He was clearly starting to lose his cool, but regardless, I was still grateful to have somebody who knew a little bit about survival with me.
Nick, I don't know what to do. Please, why did you do that?
I reached into the first aid kit, hoping that there would be anything at all that I could use to somehow fix his previous injuries. I could barely look at him. His face was so grotesque that even thinking of it made me queasy.
Why, Nick? Why did you do that?
I started to sob, and at this point I broke down. Everyone on this tour but me was now dead, aside for maybe the captain and Nick. Even then, Nick probably wasn't going to survive. We were in a cave that seemingly mutilated anyone who touched it. There was an unknown stranger that may have been a time traveler that is now a mummy. For all I knew, maybe we were the time travelers. On top of that, I was completely alone in the most isolated part of the entire world. My economics degree was not going to help me right now. Okay, Vanessa, stay calm. I could maybe bandage him up. As I rustled through the first aid kit looking for a miracle, Nick made one final gurgle, and with that, he was dead.
Don't freeze.
I already knew I was fucked at this point. I don't know how I could possibly survive at this point. I felt like I was walking for miles, and after all the shit I had seen, I couldn't focus on anything but staying awake and not freezing to death. There's a theory that a human would do anything necessary to survive, and even though the odds were against me, I was still planning on trying. I was hungry, but I was far from starving, so I was okay in that aspect. I didn't have much water, but I wasn't completely depleted. The only real issue I was working against, aside from the mental trauma, was the frostbite. I was determined to make it out of this alive.
And then I saw the ship.
I'll hand it to you, lass. You've got quite the natural survival instinct. I woke up to see Korvac leaning over me. Now, when I planned for this voyage, the last person I thought I'd need to deal with was you. Ain't it funny that the only person with no experience at all in this terrain is the only one to survive? Not sure how you and the boys survived the initial culling. But nonetheless, it'll be taken care of ye soon enough. I looked down to see that my hands were tied. My vision was blurry, but I could see that I was on the ship. A part of the ship I hadn't seen before. As I started to come to, I realized that I was in a boiler room of sorts. Not only that, but all the bodies from the other groups were stationed around me, standing up. What the hell?
What the hell are you doing? What is happening? I screamed between silent sobs.
Oh, don't you worry your pretty little head about these guys. They're still dead. They ain't no zombies. I just had to prop them up for, the ritual.
The what?
Well, yeah, see, lass, I'm not a bad guy. Clearly, in your situation, you won't see me as anything more than that. But what I'm doing here tonight, I'm doing to protect ye. Well, protect the future generations that'll come to fortify this here earth, at least.
I just sat, slack-jawed.
Now, there have been strange going-ons that our forefathers, and their forefathers, and their forefathers' forefathers even had even known about for years. In fact, it went back to before biblical times even. There are some things out there, lass, that no one speaks about. And if ye were to risk talking about it, they'd call ye crazy and toss ye into a loony bin.
I don't understand. You're insane.
Nay, lass, I'm about the most competent man here. At first, I felt a tugging at my heartstrings when I had to do this deed. Now, it's almost like second nature. Mind you, it ain't something that I enjoy, but it's something that needs to be done. If anything, you could say I'm the hero here. At the cost of a few deaths a year, I prevent this whole world from falling apart to the older gods that walked the earth before us.
My mind couldn't comprehend it anymore. I have seen a lot of crap in the past few days. But whatever reason, this is what put me past the breaking point.
You're a sick, pathetic old man. You have no power anymore, so you're attempting to get some by hurting innocent people? But you're worthless. Because even if you kill me, you'll never get the power you want. Someone is going to stop you. I don't know what you did to those other people. I assumed you poisoned them. Or maybe you had tour guides in on it. I don't care. But people will find out about this. You won't get away with it.
Hey, lass. I almost wish it were true. What you say now is far preferable to the truth. I promise you'll see soon enough.
Korvac turned towards the door.
Hey, Korvac! If you're going to kill me, you look at me while you do it. This is your fault, you frickin' coward.
With tears in his eyes, his glance met mine.
Honestly, darling, I lied. It really never gets easier for me.
With that, he shut the door behind him. I wasn't sure what to think aside from the animalistic urge to escape. I pondered for a moment if he was telling the truth. What if there really was some eldritch abomination that feeds off of us to let the rest of humanity survive? I almost laughed out loud at the thought of it. That's when I heard it. A deep, otherworldly growl. It came from below my feet, but at the same time I could feel it radiating from my chest. The ground before me started to waver, almost like I was looking just beyond a flame, and a black sludge erupted from the ground to create a horrifying sight before me. It stood at least 7 feet tall, but it seemed like it was holding back its true form since the boiler room wasn't much larger. It was black, but not just any black you or I might have seen. It was so black that it hurt my eyes. Its color was that of an endless void, or a black hole, even though I had no comprehension of what that might look like. It was almost humanoid, but where there should have been ribs, there seemed to be tentacles withering beneath the flesh. Two small vestiged faces seemed to develop in its back, where its shoulders should have been. They just moaned in a noise that wasn't human. It was almost like the sound of a bear growling mixed with what a vacuum of space might sound like. And I don't have any other way to describe it. The creature turned towards me after, admiring the sacrificial humans laid before it, and it spoke.
M.K. Vetres epute di.
I may have been an economics major, but I did take Latin, and I understood. And now, the old gods feast.
I remember thinking that I never felt so small. I stood on the deck of the largest ship I had ever seen in my life, in the middle of the ocean that stretched out for forever in every direction, with what seemed like the entire universe spread out above me. I couldn't stop snapping pictures, but not a single one seemed to capture the sheer magnitude of what I saw. My last picture had a strange sort of blur in it that I couldn't immediately place, at least until the wind shifted and a small cloud of something was blown into my face. It smelled smoky. Seconds later, watching the direction that it came from, I saw more of it drifting downward towards the ocean. I leaned over the railing and craned my neck to see where it was coming from. A man stood on the deck above me, young-looking and wearing a crew uniform. He had a large cardboard box propped up against the railing and was scooping out handfuls of sandy gray matter to toss overboard. I hate to admit how long it took me to put it together, but once I did, I freaked out and started swatting at my hair and coat. I had just taken a faceful of human ash. When I looked up again, the man was staring down at me. He gave me what I hoped was an apologetic look. He grabbed the box and ran. The next morning over breakfast, I was confiding in my cabin neighbor, Anne. I told her about the guy spreading ashes and how much it freaked me out. She told me that she thought that it was a nice way to go out. I guess at her age, she thinks about that sort of stuff more than I do. Before we could finish discussing it, an announcement came over the ship's speakers. An overly chipper voice was telling us that a storm was forecasted tonight, and for safety reasons, we would all be asked to stay in our cabins from 10 p.m. until breakfast. I immediately pulled out my phone and checked the satellite maps online, but nothing I saw suggested rough seas or any kind of storm front. I spent the day relaxing. It's a cruise, after all. But the later it got, the more I found myself watching the sky. Where was this storm supposed to be coming from? Even when time was creeping towards our new curfew, there wasn't a cloud in the sky, just millions of stars. It was breathtaking, standing at the railing and seeing the Milky Way touch the horizon. My thoughts were interrupted by a crew member asking me to please move to my cabin for my own safety. It was after 10 now, and the decks were occupied only by the crew and the last few stragglers they were ushering indoors. I apologized with a smile, which the crew member didn't return. I assumed he was one of the less friendly ones, but the longer he stared at me, the weirder it got. He didn't move or take his eyes off of me until I was completely out of sight. Even then, I think I saw him peek around the corner when my door was shutting. A few hours passed before curiosity got the best of me. I snuck out of my room, not that there was anyone watching anyways, and went out onto the deck to see what this dangerous storm was. It was nothing. Not a raindrop nor a snowflake. Not a single rough wave. The sea was calmer than it had been in days. Even the wind had died down completely. I wandered down the deck towards a row of lifeboats, absently staring at the gentle waves rolling in the distance. A faint voice caught my attention. I could barely make out the two dark figures in the distance. One leaning on the rail and another one standing and holding a large box. I snuck closer, ducking down behind the lifeboats, trying to hear what they were saying. "That's so gross," a feminine voice giggled.
"Grosser than touching it?"
a man voice responded. He pulled a large plastic scoop out of his box, the kind you normally use for ice, and poured a scoopful of something over the railing. After last night's discovery, I assumed it was more ash. "Did you put it back in the kitchen?"
"What if I do?"
The conversation devolved from there into teasing, with him randomly acting like he was going to throw a scoop of ashes at her, and her squealing and giggling and swatting him on his arm. I was about to move on when she picked up a second box and started to tip it over the railing. He jumped forward and snatched it out of her hands.
Is this what you've been doing?
He half shouted. I'm not touching that, she whined back.
You can't just dump it all in.
He wasn't teasing anymore, and her face fell at the dark look he was giving her. Why does it matter?
It just does. I know you're new, but the rules are important.
He gave her such a look of contempt that even I shrank back.
I shouldn't even be here, he mumbled half to himself. I was supposed to be on 12.
Then maybe you should go, she snapped back. He threw his plastic scoop back into the box and stormed off, thankfully in the opposite direction from me. She watched him go, and as soon as he was out of sight, she dumped the entire box of ash over the edge and left too. She was trying to look tough, for who, I'm not sure. But when she passed by my hiding place, she was chewing her lip and fidgeting with the chain around her neck. I waited a few minutes before coming out and going to the railing. I looked down into the ocean below. The clump of ash was already disappearing somewhere below the surface. As I searched, another faint cloud drifted past somewhere below. I scanned the decks beneath me and finally spotted another hand reaching out, scattering ash to the sea. A cold chill crept down my spine. I looked back and forth along the decks. The more I spotted, the easier they were to find, both above and below, more than I could count. Every deck, every section, as far as I could see in every direction, every last one of them tossing human ash to the depths below. Anne came to check on me around noon. I had been holed up in my cabin since last night, and she got worried when I didn't show up for breakfast. I must have looked crazy, checking both ways down the hall before I let her in. I told her everything. I had to tell somebody. This was just too much for one person. She patted my hand and said it was some kind of a program. You and I are lucky. There are a lot of people that never get to see this part of the world. Some people never get to travel or sail at all. I know she meant well, but she wasn't there last night. I needed her to understand how big this was. I made up my mind before she had even left. I was going back out there. I was taking my camera and I was getting evidence. A little after midnight, I crept up the stairs to a higher deck. I didn't want to take the risk of running into anyone who worked near my cabin and might recognize me. Our new curfew had become a standing order on the ship, although I still saw no evidence of foul weather. The deck up here felt bigger, and it was high enough to give me a touch of vertigo when I looked over the railing. I kicked myself for not choosing more carefully. There was hardly any place to hide here. I was just thinking about moving to another deck when I heard a door open behind me. I crouched into the darkest shadow I could find, armed only with the camera, praying that my breathing wasn't too loud. Another crew member with another cardboard box emerged and started making his way down the deck. He placed the box next to the railing and looked out into the ocean for a minute. I switched my camera on as quietly as possible. I had already turned off the screen so the light wouldn't give me away, and I had a long zoom lens equipped so I wouldn't have to get close. From here, I could see every little detail. I zoomed in on his face first and breathed a sigh of relief. He had earbuds in. As long as he was listening to something, he wouldn't hear my camera shutter. I snapped one shot of his face just to make sure. Zero reaction. This might be easier than I thought. I backed off the zoom a little to get a clear shot of his jacket with the ship's logo. Then I noticed he was wearing a piece of jewelry, a silver chain around his neck that I could have sworn I had seen before. I zoomed in again to see a shining pendant dangling over his chest with some kind of symbol carved into it. I got a few shots, but none of them came out very clear. The boy dipped out of frame and I had to zoom out. He had bent over and was reaching into the box at his feet. My finger touched the shutter, waiting for the scoop of ash to be visible.
he pulled out a human arm. It was charred beyond reason, but completely unmistakable. It had a hand, four fingers and a thumb, and I even think it had a ring on it. Bile crept up the back of my throat, and he threw the arm overboard. Cold as it was on deck, I began to sweat. I found enough focus to hold the shutter and close my eyes. The camera clicked rapidly, catching shot after shot of something I couldn't stand to watch. Eventually, my fear of being caught overcame my revulsion, and I managed to open my eyes again. I watched the boy throw the last few chunks of thankfully unrecognizable flesh over the railing. Then he just stared down into the box. I held my breath, not sure if I could handle any more twisted revelation. He pulled his sleeve over his hand as a barrier and reached in. What he pulled out, I see that scorched face every time I close my eyes. I was still dry heaving in the shadows when he walked away with the empty box. I stumbled to the railing, hoping some fresh air would soothe me. Like an idiot, I ended up looking down at the ocean. I saw hundreds of them bobbing in the water, just pieces, everyone burned to a crisp. I followed the railing towards the back of the ship, too stunned to care about being seen. The sea below was littered with human remains, with more still falling from the ship. I stood at the furthest point of the deck, watching them float away into the wake of the ship. Maybe it was paranoia sinking in, but I swear I see a few disappearing. Someone shouted from the upper deck and I ran. I didn't stop until I was barricaded in my cabin, trying not to cry. I was pretty sure I had stayed far enough ahead to lose them. Otherwise, they would have been breaking my door down. There was no way I was supposed to see any of that. I didn't turn on any lights that night, and I sure as hell didn't sleep. I dragged my laptop into my closet and loaded my pictures onto it. I decided not to post them until I was safe and off the ship. I regret that now. As soon as I heard noise in the next cabin, I ran over and begged Anne to let me in. She was shocked to see me so early. The first thing I did was sit her down and make her look at the pictures I had taken. She tried so hard to explain it away, but I think she realized how messed up it was. She thought that we should just stay quiet and go back to our normal cruise activities, keep our noses out of business that wasn't ours. I wanted to argue because whatever was happening was clearly shady and probably illegal. But after last night's close call, I didn't think I should be taking a risk. So, I let it go. I still wouldn't leave the cabin. Anne was nice enough to sneak me food from the buffet to bring back to me, and we passed the day with card games and TV shows. I even managed to sleep a little after dinner. I was wide awake and reviewing the pictures on my laptop for the 10th time when the knocking started. They announced themselves as maintenance, saying that there was a problem with the room. Anne woke up and went to answer. I swear, I tried everything to stop her. Looking back, it probably wouldn't have helped. I hid in the closet. It was really the only place to hide in these cabins. I just knew that whoever was knocking, it wasn't good, and I didn't want them to know that I was here. It was over before I could even think about intervening. Anne's voice had gone from confused to muffled in an instant. It sounded like she tried the fight, but she was easily overpowered and dragged out of the room.
"She's not here." The voice through the wall stunned me. "Probably snuck out again."
They were in my cabin.
"If she's outside, she's fair game."
"Should we get back up?"
"Better ask the captain."
I waited until the voices were gone and then took off down the hall. I wasn't even sure where I was going right away, but I thought it was the direction that they had taken Anne. The ship felt like a maze tonight. I ran blindly down hallways, making wild guesses and finding more dead ends that I knew existed. I opened every stairwell I found, listened for noise, and moved on.
I prayed they were still on this deck. If not, I might never find them. After what felt like a millionth wrong turn, I had to stop and catch my breath. A little clarity finally came to me, and I found the nearest door out to the deck. I looked over both ways, and I saw movement near the back of the ship, so I ran. I came around the corner to see Anne alone, gagged, and bound to the railing by her wrists. With no crew in sight, I ran to her, pulled the gag out, and started untying her. She thanked me, her face wet with tears. I heard a door open behind me and worked faster at the ropes. There were at least two people, judging by the yelling, and one of the voices was familiar. I untied Anne just in time and yelled for her to run and get inside. I wasn't sure why, but something I had heard back at the cabin made me think she'd be safer indoors. Two young men from the crew were rushing at me, and the first thing I did was put myself between them and Anne, hopefully giving her time to get away. I need the first one, the angry guy from two nights ago, solidly between the legs, dropping him to the deck. The other one tried to shove past me, but I grabbed him by the jacket and pulled him off his feet. I managed to stay on top of him for a minute, but he was struggling hard. I held on to whatever I could until something broke and I was shoved off and onto the deck. The first guy stumbled back to his feet. I thought he was coming for me, or maybe after Anne, but he ran back the way he had come. I looked back towards the railing. Something was creeping up the side of the ship, so pale it was almost translucent. Four long digits felt their way up the railings, then a fifth. A fully formed hand, each finger longer than my whole body, slid up and over the railing. Skimming along the deck, it hovered near the guy I had just been fighting with. He reached for his neck, searching. He looked at me, and I opened my hand to reveal the silver pendant. He dove towards me, screaming incoherently. The hand was faster. It descended on him like a cage, then wrapped its fingers around him one at a time. Everywhere the pale skin touched him, his clothes were burnt away and his skin was scorched black in an instant. Screams of pain echoed around me, and I was choked by the scent of the burning flesh. I clutched the pendant to my chest and prayed it wouldn't notice me. He kept eye contact with me the entire time he was being lifted over the railing. I think he expected me to save him somehow. Driven by shock, I crawled to the edge and lowered over. I could see the rest of the monster's arm glisten under the moonlight. Its skin stretched thin over bones and bulging at the joints. The elbow was crashing into the sea, where I'm grateful that everything else was hidden in the pitch-black waters below. I had watched the man I had inadvertently doomed being dragged into the waters still screaming. For his sake, I hope it was quick. After the water had gone still, I heard a shout. Within seconds, I was surrounded and being dragged back inside. They took back my stolen pendant and locked me up in a little cell in the security office. They tried to interrogate me, but I answered their questions with my own. They wanted to know where my camera was, and I wanted to know where Anne was. They wanted to know everything I saw, and I wanted to know why they were doing this. We went in circles for a good long while. No one got any answers. Right now I'm still locked up in security with the phone I stole from one of the crew. It doesn't have cell service out here, only the ship's Wi-Fi. And I don't have my pictures for proof. This is the best I can do. I still don't know why they were feeding that thing. I'm starting to wonder if it's the real purpose of bringing a cruise this far south. I'm pretty sure I at least know why Anne and I were chosen. Both traveling alone, seemingly easy targets, and easy enough to make up an accident for me or natural causes for her. On a ship this size, they've got plenty more to choose from. I don't know how many others they're going to sacrifice. They spent at least 3 days chumming the waters.
so I'm betting they've warmed it up for a good feast. It's only a matter of how many they think that they could get away with.